Welcome to Middletown Free Library. This is Studio 2 on the road, where today we're on location in Media, Delaware County. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. America needs more housing. That's not me talking. That is the consensus of researchers who say the country needs to build 4 to 7 million more homes in order to meet population needs and bring down costs for renters and buyers.
A growing chorus of thinkers has come to the conclusion that we need to embrace an abundance agenda, one that slashes red tape, reduces zoning restrictions, and spurs a development boom. In short, yes, in my backyard.
Here is one of those thinkers, Ezra Klein of the New York Times, in an interview last month with PBS on what he sees as the need for politicians to unleash a building boom.
You have to see it as enough of a crisis to break some eggs. We're going to need some kind of synthesis, a party, a coalition, a movement that insists on making government work, not because it hates government, not because it doesn't want government to do big things, but precisely because it cares about government and it does want government to do big things.
But even those who agree with that sentiment in theory know it can actually become highly contentious in practice. Many homeowners remain skeptical of changes to their towns and neighborhoods that they fear will result in less parking, less open space, more traffic, and more sprawl.
And then there is the basic calculus of the risk that comes with change. If people are happy with their communities and their home values, why would they agree with things that could disrupt that? In short, not in my backyard.
So what's the path forward? Can we find a compromise that solves the housing affordability crisis while preserving green space and limiting the downsides of development?
We will be hashing those questions out with a slate of wonderful guests with different points of view for much of this program. But first, we want to set the scene with WHYY suburban reporter Kenny Cooper. Kenny, thanks for joining us for this Studio 2 On the Road event.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kenny, you have been following debates around housing, zoning, and the fight for open space in the Philly suburbs for several years at this point. Walk us through what you've seen and what you've learned in your time on this beat.
Usually people consider the suburbs to be this really quiet place. You know, it's this picturesque place. It has picket fences, nice houses, good schools. You don't really see the dark side of things until you have to go to a zoning meeting late at night. And neighbors are yelling at each other. They're yelling at their commissioners, many of whom are part-time. That's not their full-time job, so they just got off of work. And it stretches from 6 to 8 to 9, 10, even 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
Right? So that's what I've seen for the most part, is that these battles can be very intense. They're not necessarily the most frequent thing. Partially because a lot of the development in the suburbs has already happened. You know, there's most of the places that have already been zoned for housing or zoned for commercial spaces have already been built out. So what you have is either someone seeking an exemption from the zoning or someone going into the open space, the green space, to say, hey, this has now come up for sale, it's been available, and I want to develop it. And that's where that tension lies.
Wow. Those zoning board meetings sound like fun, Kenny.
Drama.
It's like a good setting for a David Lynch movie or something. So I wanted you to take us through an example of a dispute that you feel like is illustrative. And before the show, we were talking about this Delco Woods property. So tell us about Delco Woods.
So for people that aren't familiar with Delaware County, I'm assuming all of you are, right? Delco Woods used to be the former Don Guanella School. Right, it was owned by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. It's 213 acres, most of which is completely untouched. It's rolling hills, it's, you know, trees, it's thick forests, it's
sounds
even some
beautiful.
Wet marsh. Yeah, it's nice. Then the Archdiocese decided to put it up on the market in 2014. And as soon as it got on the market, you know, this big open space, 213 acres, one of the largest remaining, or the largest remaining, I think at the time, like of untouched open space in Delaware County, developers jumped on it. Mm-hmm. There was this plan in place, this idea called Cardinal Crossing, and it was going to be hundreds of houses. It was going to be rec centers, possibly a movie theater. Almost immediately, it got, you know, batted down, both by the Marple Township where it's at and also the residents who put up a big fight. There was a group that formed called Save Marple Green Space. Yeah, they kind of vowed to protect that area. So years pass, the property is kind of in limbo, and then Delaware County decides to step up and say, hey, we're going to take hold of this property through eminent domain, and we're going to save it.
So the government takes over the property.
Yeah.
And what happens?
They were heroes. They were heroes. Everyone loved them. Yeah, exactly. Play the theme music, right? They were heroes. And they even invited the public in to help formulate the plans of creating this picturesque park. They allowed them to name it, called Delco Woods. Mm. That's the new name. It's nice.
I like
that. Yeah, it's a nice name, right? And everything, they lived all happily ever after.
Oh, really?
No.
But?
pretty soon after, this is like 2023, 2024, residents catch wind of this idea to use a portion of the property for a mental health facility, a long-term facility for people to receive treatment there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't going to be on, you know, 30 acres or 10 acres. This is a 3-acre parcel of a building that was already there. And once the residents found out, mm-hmm. everything broke loose. I'm not even sure if I can say the word, right?
We have editing, don't worry.
Yeah. So that's where that ended up, right? It was this huge battle. You know, these meetings were packed. You know, people were arguing. They were yelling at the people that they were deeming heroes just months before were now their villains, right? The county council. They backed off of that plan almost, I don't want to say immediately, but pretty soon thereafter.
So the government said, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
So where is Delco Woods? Look, what happened to Delco Woods?
Well, no, Delco Woods is just going to be Delco Woods. They recently, actually this month, actually unveiled the master plan to develop, or rather I say maintain, Delco Woods as this kind of serene natural space. So we'll have a loop trail, we'll have a pavilion, but that's the most development you'll probably see on the property.
So no new housing.
No new housing.
Yeah. And sort of in your travels and covering all this, you have come away with like what major impression?
I think the major impression that I have is obviously like change is hard, right?
Yeah.
But also you have these two very real crises that are happening. I know we mentioned the housing crisis, and I just want to put that kind of in perspective. Do you guys know by any chance what's the average home price is in Chester County or Delaware County?
I would venture, so I know what it is for the whole region. I would say around half a mil.
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah.
$495,000 is the median sale for home these days,
yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Chester County.
Who can afford
that? So imagine how much money you have to make to afford
that. Yeah, and this is a crisis both in affordability and stock. So it's not much supply, and whatever supply there is, it's extremely expensive. But on the other hand, you also have this very real climate crisis that's kind of intertwined in this idea of open space, right? It's not necessarily just a desire to say like, oh, I don't want to necessarily have the character of my neighborhood change. It's also the fact that these open spaces provide very real protection against these floods. You know, these remnants of the hurricane that kind of rip up the eastern seaboard more and more frequently these days with a higher intensity, you know, these pieces of open space protect those areas from being flooded, right? So you have these two very real crises that are happening at the same time. And what you get on the back end is some of the other stuff that I covered, which is this homelessness problem that happens in the suburbs of people that, some of whom are young people that grew up in these same counties, right? They grew up in Bucks County. They grew up in Chester County, who can't afford to live in the place they grew up. Not even just rent. They can't rent. They can't buy a home. They can't live there, right? Mm-hmm. So that's ultimately what you end up. These things are all connected, right? And I think what I've learned in terms of, you know, I guess in terms of process, right, is that sometimes it just requires these different townships and these municipalities that are so independent and used to being independent working together. Right, and coming forward with a solution to say, hey, how can we balance this idea of saving this green space over here and saving this open space while also, you know, trying to adjust and adapt to the fact that the population is growing, they need somewhere to live.
Kenny Cooper.
Well done, Kenny.
Thank you so much for laying the ground for us today. Can you guys give a round of applause for WHYY Suburban Reporter Kenny Cooper? Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now we are pleased to welcome our main panelists for the remainder of the program. Mike Hayes is the director and founder of Montco 30%, which advocates for more housing in the suburbs.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Anne Hutchinson is the senior director of municipal planning for Natural Lands, which advocates for land conservation and is headquartered right here in Media. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you.
And Chris Leswing is the Director of Building and Planning for Lower Merion Township. Chris, welcome.
Yep. Thank you. Glad to be here.
So we wanted to kind of start this conversation here. There's been broad agreement that we need more housing, especially here in the suburbs. But time and time again, Good projects stall or never get built. So I want each of you to give your perspective. What do you think is really standing in the way? Is it policy? Is it people? Lay it all out, and Mike, we'll start with you.
I think I'll highlight two things. I think one, at the local level in the suburbs, there's generally a fear of change, fear for what my neighborhood might look like if a different age bracket comes in, if what happens if my neighborhood changes. So that's why you see a lot of the NIMBYism, and from my perspective, it's that fear of change. But the second thing is that we have some complicated zoning laws in Pennsylvania, right? We have over 2,000 municipalities, and because we are a commonwealth, land use, land development is determined at the local level. In terms of land use local control, some folks would say that's a great thing. You can change and steer development however you choose, and the voters decide. But there's a myriad of ordinances and steps and different hearings that you have to get through, and that slows things down. And oftentimes you can zone out things such as multifamily apartments, which over the long term has a really, really harmful impact on the community.
Thank you. And from your perspective.
I will say, in addition to concerns about change, we've seen some instances of sprawl from the perspective of development where it shouldn't be in environmentally fragile areas. And I'd love to see us go back to discussions we had in the smart growth era about what should be conserved and where development can occur. And yes, I think in response to that NIMBYism, zoning codes are often layered and have become extremely complex and could be readjusted to current needs, which involve climate change, flooding, reasons to protect land, and therefore identifying reasons that can most be developed.
All right, Chris.
So I want to look at it from a local government perspective, because I'm actually one who administers zoning codes. So I'm not going to take all this personally, but one of the things that I see, I mean, a good zoning code is a rational tool for legislators to enact what is the will of people. But that gets to be one of the issues is you really need leadership. This doesn't happen without leadership. And when, you know, part of the title of tonight is NIMBYs, YIMBYs, and you. Well, so many times politicians listen to everybody in a crowded meeting. You're in a town hall, and they'll do what the mob says. And the mobs come out because they're not happy for something, not hearing the perspective of people who want something. Right? People who think things are going well don't show up at a public meeting to complain. And the other thing is just to echo what Mike was saying, we have too many municipalities. Our government structure in this area is fundamentally flawed to be able to do real administrative work because we have just too many local interests competing against each other. And just to tell everybody, there's no quarterback. We have county governments, and they try their best, but they don't have a lot of power. So there's really no interest for communities to work together. So it's really structured against that.
One thing that strikes me about your answer there, Chris, is that it feels like when a single development is planned, the impact of that development is very intense on the people who live in the nearby area. Like, they're going to be very directly impacted by this. But the benefits are kind of abstract and diffuse. Like, you have to build a lot of developments in a lot of unnamed places over a long period of time. And, like, who really would advocate for that? Because it doesn't really impact your life directly. So in your position, do you hear from people who are advocating for that? Or is it kind of just the wonks behind the scenes saying, well, we kind of need to do this, and even though no one's really asking for it, we're just going to do it?
It's really on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
Because it's on a case-by-case basis because it's real estate driven, right? We're a capitalist society. People own real estate. Real estate fund is really one of those major engines of our economy. So somebody comes in, and there's just a lot of money involved in the whole system. And then other people are protecting their interests as well. One thing that we've taken in our perspective in Lower Merion is we've tried to educate people what those benefits are.
Yeah.
Where immediately people are when change, you think of change, well, that's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Well, what if it's not bad? Mm-hmm. What if somebody says, the first question somebody asks me is when they see a multifamily development going in, well, that's going to ruin the schools. Well, what if we showed you that actually that project is going to have less school kids than per dollar that they generate that is actually going to subsidize a single family home?
Are people persuaded by that?
Yeah.
Some people are.
Really?
Some people actually are. And there's also things that people want things in their neighborhood. People complain that they can't walk to the store. Well, what if this infrastructure was built that could improve your neighborhood better through that new development? So some of it's on a case-by-case basis against, but it can also be a case-by-case basis for.
Four. Interesting.
Yeah, and I wonder, Mike, if you can jump in on this, because has local democracy kind of made it a little too easy for some folks to get together and block something? I just wonder, is that a fair fight there?
I don't think it's a fair fight. And the next time you attend a municipal meeting, especially those that go into, you know, the late hours, you need to ask yourself, who is not here tonight? Who's not here tonight are a lot of the hourly workers, right, who are manning the grocery stores, the SEPTA bus drivers. All of those who need housing the most, in my opinion, at affordable levels, are not there. So oftentimes what happens at these local meetings is the elected officials have a skewed idea, a skewed notion for where the public opinion is. And I think that's one of the roles that I try to play at the local level, is to show them that, hey, there are people who support this. Let me introduce them to you.
Well, let me ask you, Anne, about development run amok, because while there's this strong, compelling argument for more housing to bring down costs, there is also a real environmental cost to reckless development. What are the places that you feel like, hey, we could put more here, and right, where are the places where you're like, we need to retreat from these places?
I look at three tiers. Okay. I look at cities, which are most sustainable because, one, people travel the least distance to work,
yeah,
and you have more people in a smaller area, so you're reducing greenhouse gas emissions. In the suburbs, I look at places, the inner ring, where you have strong transportation networks and their own employment and urban centers developing. And those are perhaps the trickiest, but the most appropriate for infill. And then I look at the ex-urban area, which is pretty fragile. And I will make the case that that's the place where conservation and stronger zoning codes really does belong.
So can you give us a little bit of an example? So folks, so like places that we can really understand the different examples that you're mentioning.
Turn to Chris in Lower Merion.
Yeah, I want to ask about Lower Merion, Chris, because I was just going back through, you know, the very basic census data on Lower Merion, and it seemed like growth was sort of like flat for a long time. And then between 2010 and 2020, there was like a 10% jump in population in Lower Merion. That surprised me a little bit, to be honest. And I am curious where that growth is coming from in a township that had, you know, seemed to sort of plateaued in terms of population.
That's a really great question. And it kind of, you know, builds off of what Anne was saying, that we really shouldn't be talking about zoning. We should be talking about planning. Right?
Yeah.
My degree is in urban planning, not urban zoning. Right. Planning is the ability to say where you want things, where you don't. You analyze it, much like what Anne was talking about. Now, Lower Merion is 24 square miles. It's big. It's as big as Manhattan Island. It's one of the largest suburbs in the region. It's very dense. We have about 65,000 people. And it's a bit of a microcosm for the rest of the region in that you have the inner ring, older neighborhoods, Bala Cynwyd, Ardmore, that were built up around the train station. Great places. So 10 years ago, when we updated our comprehensive plan, and we had some great leadership back then, looking at revitalizing places like Ardmore. Ardmore was losing businesses to the malls. It was losing all this walkability, adding some mixed-use development. Right? It took strong leadership to get that in there, and it's been nice. And we're seeing now there's articles in the paper. Ardmore is a new fish town.
Yeah, I saw. Someone said Ardmore is like the best dining town in the whole suburbs.
Yeah,
now.
It's, and we're seeing that in City Avenue, the City Avenue district, which was the first office park in the region because it was the first. It's the first exit on the expressway outside of Philadelphia.
Mm.
A lot of surface parking lots. It's being redone with mixed use development. All that mixed-use development has open space. It's well-planned inside it. So we're getting that's where our density is. But we also have Gladwin, Villanova, which are the larger, more ex-urban parts of the township. We're not encouraging development out there because it would just be more sprawl and more traffic. Mm-hmm. So even in the same place, you just need good planning to tie it together.
And that was Chris Leswing, the director of building and planning for Lower Merion Township, during our recent event on housing development at the Middletown Free Library in Delaware County. He was joined by Mike Hayes, director and founder of Montco 30%, which advocates for more housing, and Ann Hutchinson, senior director of municipal planning for Natural Lands. We've been listening back to our latest Studio 2 On the Road event, getting great emails and comments on our YouTube live stream. Lauren on YouTube is a little skeptical. She says, so we implement Ezra Klein's abundance politics. What's to stop corporations and landlords from snatching up those new properties? Maybe you out there have an answer for Lauren. Patricia says in an email, new housing needs to be townhouses concentrated in small towns to have the least impact on open space, and housing needs to be factory built, modular housing for the cost to be reasonable enough for the middle class. Get those comments into studio2@whyy.org via email or drop them on our YouTube live stream. And don't forget, we still want your DJ of the day suggestions. How should we close the show today? What song should we play? Send your suggestions to producer Paige at studio2@whyy.org. We'll be right back with much more from our live event, including questions on how zoning can reinforce class inequality. Stay tuned. You're listening to Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. The bulk of our show today is from the live event we hosted last week at the Middletown Free Library in Media, Delaware County. But we also want to hear from listeners today. Would you support a building boom if it solves our housing affordability problem? How much of our area should be kept green for environmental and aesthetic reasons? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or drop a comment in our YouTube live stream. Now, let's get back to our conversation with Chris Leswing, the Director of Building and Planning for Lower Merion Township, Ann Hutchinson, the Senior Director of Municipal Planning for Natural Lands, and Mike Hayes, Director and Founder of Montco 30%. Mike starts us off here talking about his evolution from committed environmentalist to advocate for housing affordability.
So in my early 20s, I had a lot longer hair, and and I was a proud, card-carrying member of the NRDC and the Sierra Club, all great organizations. And I saw development in general as a thing that should be stopped, as a thing that would change our neighborhoods, impair the streams, clog our roads, do a lot of bad things. And I was telling the team a little bit earlier today that in my 30s, as I, looked for affordable apartments, I realized, geez, when you don't build, this has downriver consequences like you wouldn't believe.
And streams to rivers there.
Yeah, and it really, really does. And I realized that, geez, like if we can't be anti-development all the time, right? There are some really bad developments, but there are some really good ones too, especially those that are around transit systems and things like that. And I think that, it was an eye-opening moment for me in my 30s once I realized, geez, we haven't built enough, and that's a huge problem.
Yeah, you were telling me that there was I'm not doxing you here because you don't live there anymore. You were telling me you used to have an apartment and just the trajectory of the rent on that one apartment. Can you tell that story again?
Yes. As a matter of fact, in Bridgeport, the Bridgeport Towers, they had a fire in February, and I was talking to some of my fellow tenants there, and they were saying that in 2014, the rent there for a small 300-foot studio was about $650 or so. Fast forward to today, and obviously our wages haven't gone up that much. It's $1,100 for a 300-foot studio. A lot of my fellow neighbors there, they were living off Social Security, right? Living off of a $16 an hour at the local Wawa. They obviously can't afford that.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out that, of course, there's been inflation, but it's very easy to map like average home price, sale price against average income. And let me tell you, the trajectory is straight up right now. At the same time, we live in a society where for the vast majority of people, if they're lucky enough to own a home, this is going to be the most important investment in vehicle in their life. And anything that threatens the value of that investment is a huge threat to their personal financial well-being. So, I mean, Chris, when you hear from homeowners who are worried about the character of their neighborhood, yes, I understand that can be code for other things. But at the same time, it could also be, I'm looking out for my financial self-interest here. I mean, this is my piggy bank. My home is my future. How do you address the concerns of someone who has so much invested in that property?
Well, Avi, I get asked that question a lot.
Yeah.
Or it comes up in my line of work. One of the things that we have access to are county deeds. We have data. And what we found is in my community, and I would pretty much say this across the suburbs, you're not losing money in a single-family home because a new single-family home's developed. It's a great fear. It's irrational. There are people that have master's degrees, you know, high degrees, and they run industry. And when they come to a public meeting, they're all of a sudden making these assumptions that just aren't true. And that's where the education of that needs to come in handy.
And I'm thinking about $500,000. Like, that's the we're getting creeping up on that. And I wonder, can we talk about other things too? Because is it a class issue? Are there other issues besides we're just trying to protect the environment? We just don't want sprawl. We don't want change. But, you know, making more affordable housing attracts all different types of people, different races, different cultures. It could change the complexion of some of these neighborhoods. Is that an issue that is bubbling underneath the surface at all?
Just because I deal with this every day and I've thought about it, I don't think it is. I think that's very low on the bottom of it. I think it boils down to cars. It boils down to traffic and convenience. Most people look at a new development and they think, how many units, how many cars, how long is this going to stop me from getting home to my house? I'm already stuck in traffic. This is going to just make my commute longer. I would say 90% of it is just the fear of more traffic. And that's where we get into sprawl and concern about this, and it's really about transportation, and it goes back to planning. We haven't once spoken about transportation. You don't start with land use. You don't start with zoning. You start with planning and transportation. We're like working our way out of a mess because we've been doing things backwards. First, you decide where you want to put things, and you decide how you're going to get there. Then you infill with the houses. But we put a house in, and then figure out how we're going to get away from there.
I also wonder about the term affordable housing. Because to me, that is a little word that gets people a little bent out of shape. And does there need to be some PR around this, using that type of term when you talk about some suburban communities? Because when people hear that, they automatically sometimes want to block it. Your thoughts on that, Mike?
This is true. If there's one phrase in my line of, in my line of work that is a buzzword for those who oppose development, it is Section 8. Section 8 is one they'll throw out there if they really don't want, you know, a mixed income development coming to town. They'll say, oh, well, we don't need Section 8. It's obviously a total misunderstanding. Section 8 refers to what is the housing choice voucher. And those are awarded to make sure that people pay no more than 30% of their income for the rent. In Montgomery County, they award it on a lottery system. It's so high in demand. But as it comes to affordable housing, yes, we talk about this all the time. Should we change it to and only say workforce housing? Should we say accessible housing? Mm-hmm. I use the phrases interchangeably, primarily because I'm a little stubborn and don't want to stop saying affordable housing. But perhaps I should, you know, change and pivot a little bit. I know there's a lot of research on this.
Yeah, and I just wonder that because I wrote down this 500K and just keep circling it. And I'm just thinking to myself, affordable would not be this. It would be much lower, and I just wonder what the appetite is in some of these communities for creating housing that would be more affordable for mass majority of the people who live in the community.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. There is, for example, there's a pretty affluent community in Montgomery County, Upper Gwynedd Township, and they have a great proposal that's in the works as well to build basically 60 homes, a kind of townhome style. 1 to 3 bedrooms, and it's a phenomenal development. It's facing a little bit of fierce resistance at the local level, you know, because it's a more affluent community. And but I think that it makes sense because it's close to a train station. Mm-hmm. It makes sense because they have the North Penn School District right there, a lot of entry-level teachers. They need an affordable place to live, as do all of the service workers. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
I do wonder, though, if there's some resentment that builds up because what we hear over and over again is that the places that are ripe for development are these inner ring suburbs or Philadelphia or places near transit. And the sort of the leafier, greener places with the big lawns and the big houses, you can't touch them because developing in those places would be inadvisable. And then I'm imagining, well, you're opening up a sort of pretty basic class division here, right? I would imagine the places that are quote-unquote ripe for development tend to be lower income than some of these places that we've described that are not to be touched. I mean, what I was hearing, your description of Lower Merion, that's what it sounded like to me, Chris. I mean, Gladwin is on the higher end, right?
Gladwin is, but Bala Cynwyd is also very high.
Yeah.
Gladwin, Merion, and what we have seen in the last 20 years, one of the best things I've realized in the last 20 years since I've been a planner in Lower Merion Township is now people want walkable communities. When I first got
to Lower
Merion,
dynamic's changing is what
you're
telling
me. It's
changing.
Okay. And that's so the value of being in a walkable community that you can walk to a park, walk to a store, has a lot more value than being way out in Gladwin where you have to drive every single place.
Why did that change? How did that change?
I don't know.
Because that feels like that's the change we need to have.
Whatever it is, it's great. Right? Okay. People are more concerned about fitness. People are more concerned about the social aspects of it.
Yeah.
So building, getting those inner ring areas right is just as good. And that could create a class distinction from people who are trapped in an automobile that really have to go everywhere out in the exurbs.
And I wanted to ask you about scale, because we brought up this idea that the nation needs, 4 to 7 million more housing units. That's a humongous number. And I do wonder, with putting my sort of skeptic's hat on, could we really build at that scale, given how costly it is to build in areas that are already developed, could we really build at that scale just focusing on the areas that are near transit nodes and that are already somewhat developed? Like, can we, if we could somehow summon all of our strength and focus on those areas, would we not still fall short of what we need? Can
we
get
there? That's a great question. I don't know that has been answered. I think it could be answered.
Yeah.
Because there's an incredible amount of vacant land. I read way too many zoning codes. And I will tell you that there are dozens of boroughs in the Philadelphia metropolitan area that where the zoning allows 4 to 6 to 8 units per acre. And they are developed at about 2 to 2.5 dwellings per acre. Existing zoning. A developer could come in today.
You're saying there's low-hanging fruit.
And people are not developing.
No, they're not. So there's clearly not a market that's enticing enough to a developer.
What is it going to take to get the political will to really start making some moves here? Because we've heard a lot about gridlock. We've heard a lot about disagreements. We've heard a lot about red tape. So what do you think it will take to get the political will to start the wheels moving here, Mike?
I think the key piece for me, which was one of the reasons why I started the Monaco 30% project, and that's to make this issue a top three issue for everyone who runs for public office. Make it, you know, the issue you get asked about at town halls. Make it part of everyone's platform because that's what people are asking about. I think it's getting there. I don't think it's a top three issue right now, but for example, in 2023, Montgomery County, we had a few races for the county commissioner slot. They talked about it constantly because it was and it still is a huge issue. And so I think when you have an opportunity to talk to your state lawmakers, talk to the local electeds, bring this up because they're not doing enough.
Yeah. What are the stakes here, Chris? Like if we do not get our arms around this and housing costs continue to climb at the pace that they're climbing, what are the societal consequences of that?
Complete and utter social disfragmentation. It really is tough. But one of the things that we do have, going back to what Anne was talking about, is we also have cities, right? When you're talking about where can you put people, Philadelphia was a much larger balloon back in 1950 when it was an industrialized.
Over city. 2 million people.
Yeah. Over 2 million people.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people have left, right? And bringing people back into those urban areas that also need that sort of investment is a big deal. Now, of course, we want to do it sensitively, not gentrifying. We worry about, I don't think necessarily the gentrification is the issue, it's the displacement's the issue. But you need to work on that, and you need to be able to develop those partnerships between the cities, the counties, and the suburbs, but that's only going to come at the state level, that you need that leadership to bring that forward.
So is there more space, though, in the suburbs? I mean, and yes, Philadelphia, could the city could definitely be a spot, but I mean, we don't want to – we also are talking about
– the suburbs have a lot of parking lots. You think of the suburbs, you have to drive to them. And look at all those office parks. And one of the best things you can do in an office park now – because nobody wants to go to a boring office park and drive home, right?
Yes.
That's 1960, 1980. Well, now what you're seeing is, why not take that parking lot and build a mixed-use building on top of it? And then people...
Has remote work opened up some possibilities there? The idea that fewer people need those office parks are less profitable, is that creating some opportunity here?
It creates a tremendous opportunity. There is a lot of real estate, and that's most of those office parks are near transportation in some form. They were built on a highway. Some of them have easier access to bus or to rail or some other regional aspects of it. Creating those density in those office parks, because they're probably not coming back post-COVID in the way that they were. And there's that opportunity. And what we've found, there's so many great examples of them being converted well. And we're learning from that. And developers are learning from that.
Well, I asked about the stakes, okay? And you said very briefly, what, complete and total social disfragmentation? I mean, okay, so that sounds bad. Mike, what do you see as the stakes here if we do not create more affordable housing in the next, you know, decade or so?
I think the stakes, if we do not make the significant progress in a short amount of time, I mean, the stakes are continued pressure, price pressures on people who just can't afford it, right? Those who are spending 60% of their income on rent or the mortgage. I think that when it comes to, you know, the debate or like a lot of the dialogue we have around inflation, this is what people are talking about. Right. They're really talking about housing when they say they can't afford things anymore, because for most people, it is your number one expense. And I think that when the stakes are that high, you have to move with speed. You have to collaborate. I feel like the cross-government partnerships are really big on this one, Avi. And I just think that, you just have to have the fierce urgency to do it as quickly as possible in a responsible way.
So if there's fierce urgency, I understand everyone wants to build in Philadelphia. I live in Philadelphia. I'm not against building.
Yeah.
But does that mean if there's fierce urgency, folks in the suburbs might have to give up some open space, or they might have to accept some character change in their neighborhoods to meet this moment?
Yes, because you can't have all the above.
Simple yes. What do you think about that, Anne? I mean, do you think there's going to have to be some sort of – I don't know.
Concessions made?
It's a concession,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. There have to be concessions made. Yes.
What's a concession that would go too far for you, though? Or, like, where do you draw that line of, like, I know this is urgent, but, hey, we also can't get back open space. Once it's gone as well.
Land that is fragile from the standpoints of water and climate resilience. Because you're going to increase flooding for those many people who are already here. You're going to increase the impact of heat as temperatures increase. But I still think there's room to develop and redevelop.
I want to ask you as a follow-up to that question. And if you had to go back and they said, look, Anne, I understand there are environmental concerns.
Right.
But if you had to... you know, sort of free some space that maybe you had blocked off, where would those spaces be? And this might hurt a little bit, but
no,
I'm just saying if there were areas, yes.
Just as there are plenty of examples in this region of development that took place where it shouldn't, there are a few examples of conservation that maybe took place for the wrong reasons. So areas near major highway interchanges, areas near transportation corridors, areas uninhibited by water and forests and agricultural lands. Perhaps those should have been developed more intensively.
So there are spaces, you're saying, that where building could happen if the need was strong enough.
And I think there are places that aren't protected by conservation easement or as parks that still remain in this region that could be developed. Absolutely. I'm not making the case that every square inch of, unprotected land should be preserved.
And that was Anne Hutchinson, the Senior Director of Municipal Planning for Natural Lands, during our recent event on housing development at the Middletown Free Library in Delaware County.
She was joined by Mike Hayes, director and founder of Monco 30%, which advocates for more housing, and Chris Leswing, the director of building and planning for Lower Merion Township. As we've been listening back to this live event, we've been getting great emails and comments on our YouTube live stream. Liz says, what about rundown and empty buildings in cities instead of new housing? How about refurbishing older buildings closer to transportation than development in green spaces? Steven says, yes, we need new construction, but it has to be quality construction. Have you seen the travesty that is Ridge Avenue just west of Broad Street? The amount of old buildings torn down and replaced with garbage construction is astonishing. Keep those emails coming. We've got our DJ of the day coming up too. We'll be back in just a moment with more from our live event, including an audience question about the role of the housing stock currently owned by aging baby boomers. Stick with us. This is Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. The bulk of our show today is from the live event we hosted last week at the Middletown Free Library in Media, Delaware County. It was so great to see everyone there. We also want to hear from listeners today. Would you support a building boom if it solves our housing affordability problem? How much of our area should be kept green for environmental and aesthetic reasons? Email us, studio2@whyy.org, or drop a comment on our YouTube live stream. Now let's get back to our conversation with Ann Hutchinson, the Senior Director of Municipal Planning for Natural Lands, Mike Hayes, Director and Founder of Montco 30%, which advocates for more housing, and Chris Leswing, the Director of Building and Planning for Lower Merion Township. Chris starts us off here responding to a prompt by Cherry to the panel to outline their vision for top priorities moving forward.
My first suggestion would be to add gentle density, right? You don't have to do that. You don't have to hit the home run, right? You don't have to get the grand slam of all 4 billion units all at the same time. The suburbs, you can add things like accessory dwelling units. You can add subtle things. You don't have to get rid of single-family zoning by any means, but you can do targeted infill development. You can add these small apartment buildings in downtowns. A lot of our downtowns need this. So you're slowly adding this up and building this up over the course of time, and sooner or later you add up all these municipalities, you've got a lot of housing.
Yeah, that needs to start today. And what would you say needs to happen right now we should be doing?
Historically, after World War II, we did a lot of things to subsidize those single-family homes built out in the suburbs, like the Federal Highway Act and tax mortgage credits. And, you know, we need some new tools, like maybe our community development block grant program could be recalibrated so that that money goes to building density in cities and those infill places in the suburbs. Hmm. And relax the zoning in those inner city and areas targeted for density and keep it pretty firm where we need things for climate resilience.
And Mike, what do we need to do today? So 10 years from now, we're not having this conversation.
I think step one really starts with the community work. I think when we try to bottle these things up and limit public input, that's where the mistrust grows. I think we need to embrace the chaos that happens sometimes in the local government. Need to embrace the chaos, but invite public participation, build trust. That's step one.
Well, I hope we've built some trust today. Hey. We're going to turn it over to some
questions.
Q&A right now.
I'm Suzanne Clouser. I'm a Middletown Township resident, and I'm a baby boomer. And I've been hearing a lot about your sense of urgency and also your 5 to 10 year plan. No one's mentioned the fact that the population is really shifting. Mm-hmm. And in 5 to 10 years, a lot of people in this room aren't going to be here. And our homes are going to be up for sale. Don't develop in sensitive areas only to find that there's a glut on the market in 5 to 10 years when the boomers move along.
That's a great point, Suzanne. Thank you. My first thoughts on it are that there are so many trends that are changing right now. One of them is that we do have an older state. I think we're one of the 5 oldest states. And people are not getting married as much. They're not starting families. So they're not necessarily looking for single family homes. So to your point, I think there will be, in the not too distant future, a glut of single family homes on the market. So the question for me, I guess, is will the prices drop quickly or no? And can we build enough of the housing that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s want, which seems to be what's going on in Ardmore, right? A building high, Conshohocken, places like that. That seems to be where they want to be.
Well, yeah, because that brings up an important point, yeah, which is that there can be supply and demand issues, not enough supply, but there can also just be a mismatch of supply with what the demand is, and that can create the same type of gridlock and price issues that we've been talking about.
Don Melnick, 42-year resident of Middletown Township. And over those years, I've seen a lot of development. And one of the things that has struck me in the last 10 to 15 years in particular is that every sign outside an apartment building, a new apartment building, a new townhouse development, even new single-family homes is luxury apartment, luxury mm-hmm. homes. So I want to come back to this issue of affordable housing, and maybe that's the wrong term to use. I'm not quarreling about that. But I'm wondering if any municipalities in the Delaware Valley require developers to include a specified minimum percentage of truly affordable housing.
Mike and Chris, all of you. Okay.
All of you.
And is that a good idea?
Right. So it's difficult to mandate that, but we have a very creative solicitor in Lower Merion Township. And when we went through our zoning code 4 years ago, we wanted to have – we were seeing the new development in Ardmore and City Avenue, and we were seeing a lot of pressure on that, but we wanted to have an affordable component. So in Ardmore, what we do is we allow X amount of height, but if you want to build that next two levels next story or go higher, you have to provide a certain amount. You have to provide 20% of the entire building as affordable, which is workforce. So it's 80% of the median income that way. So that we use, and we've been able to negotiate that as well in some of the other areas. But I think it's there to be done in zoning codes. We talked about zoning code was the bad thing, but these are good tools that you can add in to add to incentivize inclusionary housing in it. You just need to keep your base levels low so developers naturally want to take advantage of that. But when we presented it to developers in the suburbs, when we said, well, this is the deal. If you want to get to that extra story, they look at the numbers and say, yeah, this works.
Hmm. Okay,
it's 20, there. It's on the table. It's low-hanging fruit.
And you wanted to add?
Well, I think it's important that residents understand that the state planning code does not specifically permit municipalities to require affordable housing, as is done in the state of New Jersey. Like Chris, I've written zoning codes with that incentive, and I've had some developers tell me that incentive isn't enough. I still make a lot more money building market rate housing. And I had a community approve a wonderful mixed-use development with 65% open space and an affordable component. About two decades ago, great leaders, those elected officials were not reelected.
Development
has not been built to this day.
Hi, my name is Libby Skivo. I'm a realtor, and I also live in Middletown Township. The elephant in the room to me seems to be this post-pandemic era. So how do we balance the density needed for affordable housing? And a lot of my clients want space. They want this bubble. They want protection. They want to know that they're going to have the ability to have a lot of space in the event there is another pandemic.
That's a great question.
And I feel like, can I add on that real quick? Just like we talked about how traditionally, right, housing demand and supply is driven by proximity to job. But as that begins to maybe unravel with remote work, like, are we maybe using the wrong inputs to potentially try to solve this problem, or do we need to recalibrate? So you answer her question, mine's worse. But, you know, yeah, I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, what people want in this post-pandemic world might not be aligned with what sort of the planning cognoscenti want. Potentially.
I didn't quite read it the same way.
Okay.
It's not necessarily about protecting the suburbs. It's protecting, I would go back to what this other woman was talking about, all the old towns in Pennsylvania, New York State. Think about all those lovely old mill towns that have gotten hollowed out, that were built in that beautiful brick downtowns that nobody's living in today. Remote work can save those, and there's still space. It's not about having to have 5 acres around you. It's maybe living in what Middletown has, a lot of walkable neighborhoods. It's like 1/3 of an acre, quarter of an acre, smaller little lots, areas that have infill, a variety of housing units in themselves. We just need to get ourselves away from that idea that everything has to be an acre, 2 acre lots that are separated by cars. You can still have a lot of greenery in a community and have space and have density.
And that was a recording from the live Studio 2 On the Road event we hosted last Thursday in Media, Delaware County. Thanks to Ann Hutchinson, the Senior Director of Municipal Planning for Natural Lands, Mike Hayes, Director and Founder of Montco 30%, and Chris Leswing, the Director of Building and Planning for Lower Merion Township. Also thanks to WHYY Suburban reporter Kenny Cooper, and to the staff of the Middletown Free Library and all those great Studio 2 listeners who joined us. And by the way, be on the listen out for future Studio 2 On the Road events. We list those on the events page, whyy.org/events. Lots of great emails and comments still coming in. Let me read this one from Janet, who says, of course, it's about class and race. The other reasons are just a cover. Sadly, I've seen and heard these discussions in my suburban neighborhood. Max says, the solution to new housing is new towns with real downtowns. Grid style is a proven system of housing, less swirly, whirly, sprawly streets. Jim wants a 5-year moratorium on new construction until we identify and list all vacant structures that could be retrofitted. And Angela says, something that comes to mind that hasn't been mentioned is the perception of renters. I hear many homeowners talk about renters with disdain. The assumption seems to be that renters don't care about the property or community. Interesting takes from all of you. Thanks for listening today. And now let's get to our DJ of the day, who is Liz from Perkasie. She recommended this song, Malvina Reynolds' 1962 recording of Little Boxes. Let's take a listen.
Where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
I had my money on Pink Houses from John Mellencamp, but hey, that's a good one, too. Studio 2 is produced by producer Paige Murray Bessler, Debbie Builder, and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique were our studio engineers today. Charlie Kyer was our live engineer. And our executive producer is Kevin McCoy. For Cherry Gregg, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you next week.